Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now on Proverbs chapter 31, the last chapter in the book of Proverbs. I will entitle this chapter King Lemuel's Mother's Proverbs, plus an epilogue on the excellent wife. Verse 1 says, "The words of King Lemuel, the oracle which his mother taught him." Now, who this King Lemuel is, nobody knows. There is no account anywhere else of King Lemuel. Here's some speculative options. He could have been a prince of a different country, perhaps. Chaldea, since a Chaldee word is used three times in his mother's address to him. He could be Solomon himself. John Gill says this is the general sense of Jewish and Christian writers. Perhaps Lemuel is a corruption for Solomon. Perhaps Lemuel is a pet name given by Bathsheba, his mother, to Solomon. And then Solomon used it because the Proverbs were from his mother. Or it could be that Solomon had just had another name named Lemuel. Adam Clark says it's according to general opinion. Now, this is in the 19th century. I don't know what it is now in the 21st century. But Adam Clark doesn't go along with the general opinion of his time. He says this, "But who is Mule or Lemuel? Solomon, according to general opinion, and the mother here mentioned, Bathsheba. I cannot receive these sayings, for, first, number one, whoever this was, he appears to have been the firstborn of his mother, called here emphatically Barbitni, the son of my womb, which is not likely to be true of Solomon, as his mother had been the wife of Uriah, and possibly had borne the rough and faithful soldier some children." So Clark here assumes that son of my womb means firstborn child, and he also assumes that Bathsheba had earlier sons than Solomon. Two big assumptions. And so Solomon could not be described as son of his mother's womb because he was not the firstborn. What Clark is saying here is that Solomon would not be the firstborn of Bathsheba, probably. That's total speculation. We don't know of any children from Uriah. Second reason Clark says this is not Solomon, it is intimated here that the son had come by a lawful marriage, hence Bar Nadarai, the son of my vow, her matrimonial covenant, for so it is most natural to understand the words. We'll see that son of my vow in verse 2 in just a minute. Clark says the son of my vow is the son of her marriage vow, for it this way is most natural to understand the words. But is there any proper sense in which we can say that this was correct in reference to David, Bathsheba, and Solomon? For although the son born in adultery died, it is by no means likely that Bathsheba made any particular vows relative to Solomon. For of her piety, so much vaunted by some writers, we yet want the proofs. So Clark is saying it is unlikely that Solomon would report that he was the son of his mother's marriage vows, since his mother married David in unfortunate circumstances. Clark goes on to say, "But however this may be, there is no evidence whatever that Mule or Lemuel means Solomon. This chapter seems to be much later than his time, and the several Chaldeisms which occur in the very opening of it are no mean proof of this. If Agur was not the author of it, it may be considered as another supplement to the book of Proverbs. Most certainly, Solomon did not write it." I'm going to assume that Solomon didn't write it. Now, this chapter is said to be an oracle which Lemuel's mother gave him. Why an oracle? As one of my commentators says, because she delivered it on a foresight of the sins her son would be tempted with and liable to fall into, and this foresight was either through her natural sagacity or under a spirit of prophecy. Well, any mother would know that the problems that her son might run into are the same, and this doesn't take supernatural wisdom to know that. But it could still be called an oracle because it's coming from one's mother. And back then, any wise saying of divine inspiration was considered an oracle or a prophecy, whether the saying predicted anything or not. Now, the fact that this chapter is said to be an oracle from Lemuel's mother makes it sound like Agur might be the author of chapter 31 and the same person as Lemuel, because in Proverbs 30, the previous chapter, verse 1, we read, "The words of Agur, the son of Yakeh, the oracle." So Agur is an oracle, or Agur is giving an oracle. All that's very speculative and flimsy. Now, if it turns out that Lemuel is Solomon, Solomon has already written about what his father David had taught him. We've seen that several times in the book of Proverbs. Now he's writing about what his mother had told him. Well, all of that is all speculation. So we are going to say we don't know who King Lemuel is. We just know him as the author of Proverbs chapter 31. We move now to verses 2 and 3 of Proverbs 31. And the mother of Lemuel says, "What, O my son, and what, O son of my womb, and what, O son of my vows? Do not give your strength to women, or your ways to that which destroys kings." Now, the Holman Christian Study Bible translates that as, "What should I say, my son?" instead of just, "What, O my son?" It means, "What should I say?" Lemuel's mother calls him son of my womb. That means she bore him. And then she says, "What, son of my vows?" Now, that could be marriage vow, but it's probably a vow that Lemuel's mother made to the Lord. And she says, "God, if you will give me a son, I will do something, maybe sacrifice something at the altar." And so then Lemuel would be the son of his mother's vow, her vow offering, which is a special type of peace offering. Or it could be another option that Lemuel himself was vowed to God, like Hannah vowed Samuel to the service of God. Maybe Lemuel's mother did the same thing. Lemuel might mean dedicated to God, actually, is what Jameson Fawcett Brown says. So we're not sure. Son of my vows, it could be her marriage vows, a vow for her to get pregnant. She wants to pay that vow. Or maybe Lemuel himself is the vow given to God. At any rate, Lemuel has special meaning for his mother. She says in verse 3, "Do not give your strength to women or your ways to that which destroys king." Now we know Solomon was given to women. You know, he had 1,000 wives and they turned his heart and he went into idolatry. We know that Solomon gave himself to Delilah and his heart was turned to women. And so Lemuel's mother says the same thing for Lemuel. Don't give your strength to women. Now, what does it mean, give your strength to women? The Holman Christian Study Bible says don't spend your energy on women. Women can be quite exhausting, as any man will tell you. It takes a lot of money to support them. And if they lead you into idolatry, they'll sap you of your spiritual strength as well as your financial strength. Now, this is negative advice, a negative view of women given by Lemuel's mother. She will give a positive view of an excellent wife at the end of this chapter. We go now to Proverbs 31, verses 4 through 7. "It is not for kings, O Lemuel, it is not for kings to drink wine, or for rulers to desire strong drink." Lemuel's mother is still exhorting. Verse 5, Proverbs 31, "For they will drink and forget what is decreed." The kings will do that, "and they will pervert the rights of all the afflicted. Give strong drink to him who is perishing and wine to him whose life is bitter. Let him drink and forget his poverty and remember his trouble no more." Now, verse 4, Lemuel's mom says, "King shouldn't drink wine. Rulers, king shouldn't drink strong drink." I'm not sure what strong drink is. The NIV has beer, some kind of alcoholic beverage. Basically, she's saying it's not good for kings to get drunk. She says, verse 5, "They will drink and forget what is decreed." In other words, they will not be good kings anymore. They can't even remember what the law is that they passed. "They will pervert the rights of all the afflicted." They won't stand for the justice of people whose rights are being violated. And then she says in verse 6, "Give strong drink to him who is perishing and wine to him whose life is bitter." Verse 7, "Let him drink and forget his poverty and remember his trouble no more." Now, that sounds like Lemuel's mother is advocating drunkenness to avoid pain. What she's saying to her son, give that wine away. You don't drink it. Give it to somebody else so you won't drink it yourself. But now, is Lemuel's mother advocating drunkenness to avoid pain? No, actually, this was humanitarian advice, as the Ellicott commentator says. The pious ladies of Jerusalem used to provide medicated drink for condemned criminals. For example, Jesus was offered wine, Matthew 27:34, when he was on the cross. They gave him wine mixed with gall to drink, but when he tasted it, he would not drink it. He wanted to be awake and not drunk when he was bearing the sins of the world. So when Lemuel's mother says, give wine to him whose life is bitter, she is talking about doing a good deed to someone, a criminal on the cross, for example, criminal being crucified. Of course, Solomon was written long before the Romans, but it probably means that she's saying, dope up somebody who's in great pain, if he's a criminal of some sort, being stoned perhaps. Let him drink and forget his poverty and remember his trouble no more. I'm not really sure that Ellicott is right about that. Is that the best you can do? I guess it is. If you see somebody that's in trouble, his life is horrible, he's poor, and so you say, well, here, let's just drink some wine and forget about it. I don't think that's the best advice in the world. We go now to Proverbs 31, verses 8 through 9. Lemuel's mom tells Lemuel, open your mouth for the mute, for the rights of all the unfortunate. Open your mouth, judge righteously, and defend the rights of the afflicted and needy. Afflicted means poor. John Gill says of the mute, quote, not who are naturally so, but who cannot speak in their own behalf, either through want of elocution or knowledge of the laws, or who are bashful, timorous, and fearful, being overawed by the majesty of a court of judicature or by their prosecutors. Open your mouth for the mute, those who are mute, not because they can't speak physically, but because they can't speak legally or societally, because they're poor and they're powerless. Adam Clark says they're mute because they have no legal representation. Lemuel Muller in verse 9 says, defend the rights of the afflicted and needy. Here's some other scriptures about how kings, especially, are supposed to look out for the poor. Isaiah 1 verse 17, learn to do good, seek justice, reprove the ruthless, defend the orphan, plead for the widow. Proverbs 29:14. If a king judges the poor with truth, his throne will be established forever. Proverbs 29:7. The righteous is concerned for the rights of the poor. The wicked does not understand such concern. Psalm 72 verses 4 and verse 12. The NIV heading for this psalm is Reign of the Righteous King. May he vindicate the afflicted of the people, save the children of the needy, and crush the oppressor. For he will deliver the needy when he cries for help, the afflicted also, and him who has no helper. These first 9 verses of Proverbs 31 are miscellaneous proverbs. Starting in verse 10, we have the description of the excellent wife. And of course, this is what Proverbs chapter 31 is famous for. It's quoted all the time. Starting in verse 10, an excellent wife, who can find? For her worth is far above jewels. Now, I'm not sure whether it was Lemuel's mom who's saying this continually, continuing on from the previous verses, or whether this is Lemuel himself. One of my commentators says it's Lemuel's mother who is telling her son what an excellent wife is. I'm just going to assume that. It doesn't really make any difference. The King James has for excellent wife a virtuous wife. The NIV has for an excellent wife a wife of noble character. Who can find? In other words, it's very difficult to find such a woman. And that's true. For her worth is far above jewels. That's true. I found such a wife. Oh my gosh. When I see some of the wives that some people my age have picked, and I think how miserable their life has been, I really appreciate having an excellent wife. Her worth is far above any type of money you can find. Now the rest of this proverb, starting in verse 10, going down to verse 31, is put into the form of an acrostic. Each verse, from now on, begins with a letter of the Hebrew alphabet. The alphabet is exhausted when we get to Proverbs 31:31. That's according to Adam Clark. I don't know exactly how that's true because it doesn't add up to the exact numbers in the Hebrew alphabet, but I am too lazy to go look that up right now, so we'll just assume that this is an acrostic. Now, this woman is so excellent that no human could measure up to her. My wife almost does. I found a couple of things that didn't fit her, but really, this is Superwoman. This is Wonder Woman. And this has led many to allegorize the passage and saying it was not meant to be interpreted literally because nobody is that good. And so they say this woman is not an excellent wife. Literally, she is understanding. She's not an excellent wife. Literally, she is reason or she is wisdom. Some have said she's the church of Christ, the bride of Christ. No, she's an excellent wife. Let's forget the allegories. That's a terrible way to interpret the scripture. Now, Lemuel's mom says, who can find such an excellent wife? Well, it's difficult, but excellent wives may be found. Here's some other scriptures, other proverbs, Proverbs 18:22. He who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. Solomon, in writing that proverb, assumes that one can find a good wife. I remember my single friends, when I was at the University of South Carolina, quoted Proverbs 18:22 ad nauseum. He who finds a wife finds a good thing, as they went on the prowl looking for a wife. Proverbs 19:14, house and wealth are an inheritance from fathers, but a prudent wife is from the Lord. A wise wife is from the Lord. You better pray for your wife. You better not just find somebody that makes your heart go pity-pat, young men. And to marry her, that is stupid. You better pray about it real hard, and you better make yourself worthy of her, because if she's an excellent wife, you need to be an excellent husband. Proverbs 12:4, an excellent wife is the crown of her husband, but she who shames him is like rottenness in his bones. We go now to Proverbs 31, verses 11 through 17. Lemuel's mother continues, the heart of her husband, trust in her. The heart of the husband of the excellent wife, trust in the excellent wife. And he, the husband, will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. She looks for wool and flax and works with her hands in delight. She is like merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. She rises also while it is still night and gives food to her household and portions to her maidens. She considers a field and buys it. From her earnings she plants a vineyard. She girds herself with strength and makes her arms strong. Verse 13, she looks for wool and flax and works with her hands. She's making clothes for the family. My wife is always looking for clothes for our family. Wool and flax is what you use to make clothes with, so that's why she's looking for the wool and the flax. In verse 14, she's like merchant ships, or her house is like an import-export company. She's always buying and selling to take care of her household. I can see my wife now with the coupons, clipping the coupons, figuring out what she can buy on a very limited budget for her household. She brings her food from afar. She goes to the store, and we live a long way from the grocery store because we live in the country. She gets it all in the car, brings it back. I carry it in. She brings the food in. She rises also while it is still night. Now, she used to do that when the kids were young. She doesn't do it anymore. She gives food to her household and portions to her maidens. Yes, she's cooked and cooked and cooked a million meals. Still doing it. She considers a field and buys it. Now, she's never done that. From her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She has planted trees by my house that have grown up and put shade on the side of the house. It was not my idea. I didn't have a thing to do with it. She did it. She didn't plant a vineyard, but she planted a bunch of trees in the yard. I'm very thankful for. She girds herself with strength. She exercises every day. Got these weights. Got this little exercise pad. She's been exercising since she was, well, before I met her. I married her when she was 28, I think it was. I forgot, actually, how old she was. But she'd been exercising ever since she was 20, maybe earlier. It makes her arms strong. Yep, she's lifting those weights. So I can apply these verses to my current wife. Now let's look at verse 16. She considers a field and buys it. From her earnings, she plants a vineyard. Now, I'm going to look at this issue in just a minute. What about working outside the home for Christian wives or godly wives? That's a problem. And people say, well, this woman did. She bought a field. She's planting a vineyard. She's working outside the home. Well, a vineyard is not really outside the home. A vineyard is probably next to the home on the family property. So that verse is not apropos to the issue of whether a godly woman with children can work outside the home. She girds herself with strength and makes her arms strong. Now, this is what John Gill says about that. Here she plays the man and acts the manly part. That's what they used to say about Marie Theresa, the remarkable empress of the Holy Roman Empire, who took office, or at least became the Habsburg Empire's empress, and later on became the Holy Roman Empire's empress. They used to say this about her. Here she plays the man and acts the manly part. 1 Corinthians 16:13 says, be on the alert, stand firm in the faith, act like men. Be strong. Men are supposed to be strong. They're not supposed to be pussies. They're not supposed to be pansies. They're not supposed to be getting in touch with their feminine side like all these feminists want men to be. They want men to act like that until somebody breaks in the house. Then they want them to act like men, to be strong. But at any rate, she girds herself with strength. This shows that femininity is not sissiness. It's not girly girliness. It takes a lot of strength to manage a household. Now, I mentioned the fact about that vineyard being a part of the family home. And notice she is operating this business from her home, not outside it. It says from her earnings. I'm assuming that's from buying and selling cloth or excess vegetables and food from the family homestead. But she takes her earnings and she buys a vineyard. And people say, see there, the godly women can work outside the home. However, we need to note that most of the business that she's operating is from inside the home. She's not going out to a corporation or a company outside her home and spending all day away from her family. She's with her family in the home. Now, some say it's all right to moonlight. Some Christians say this, even outside the home, as long as the family is not neglected. I have a question to ask there. How can you work outside the home without neglecting the family? It seems to me that is awfully hard to do, if not impossible. So let's see what gotquestions.org has to say about working outside the home. I respect gotquestions.org, and that's why I'm reading this to you, although I might not agree with it. Whether or not a woman should work outside the home is a struggle for many couples and families. The Bible does have instructions regarding the role of women. In Titus 2, verses 3 through 4, Paul gives these instructions as to how a young married woman is to be trained by older women. Train the younger women to love their husbands and children, to be self-controlled and pure, to be busy at home. That's what Titus says in the Bible, in the inspired Word of God. These younger women are to be busy at home, to be kind and be subject to their husbands so that no one will malign the Word of God. In this passage, the Bible is clear that when children are in the picture, that is where the young woman's responsibility lies. The older women are to teach the younger women and to live lives that glorify God. Keeping these responsibilities in mind, an older woman's time can be spent at the Lord's leading and her discretion. Proverbs 31 speaks of, quote, a wife of noble character, unquote. Starting at verse 11, the writer praises this woman as one who does everything in her power to care for her family. She works hard to keep her house and her family in order. Verses 16, 18, 24, and 25 show that she is so industrious that she also moonlights with a cottage industry that provides additional income for her family. This woman's motivation is important in that her business activities were the means to an end, not an end in themselves. She was providing for her family, not furthering her career or working to keep up with the neighbors. Her employment was secondary to her true calling, the stewardship of her husband, children, and home. The Bible nowhere forbids a woman from working outside the home. However, the Bible does teach what a woman's priorities are to be. If working outside the home causes a woman to neglect her children and husband, then it is wrong for that woman to work outside the home. If a Christian woman can work outside the home and still provide a loving, caring environment for her children and husband, big if, then it is perfectly acceptable for her to work outside the home. Now, I know a lot of homeschooling folks won't agree with that statement, and I will point out that it is so hard to do. How do you provide a loving, caring environment for your children and husband working outside the home? Obviously, the kids have got to be farmed out to daycare or to school. Well, anyway, we continue with gotquestions.org. With those principles in mind, there is freedom in Christ. Women who work outside the home should not be condemned, and neither should women who focus on the stewardship of the home be treated with condescension. Well, of course, we shouldn't condemn people who work outside the home. A lot of times they have to for sheer economic survival. I mean, we don't want to make a council of perfection. You got to do what you got to do to stay alive. But if you've got to work outside the home so you can buy a nice fancy car with heated seats and the massage seats, I mean, really. Now, note the distinction between the younger and older woman in Titus 2, verses 3 through 4. Let me read that. In the same way, older women are to be reverent in behavior, not slanderers, not addicted to much wine. They are to teach what is good, so they may encourage the young women to love their husbands and to love their children. So the younger women are going to have children, more likely to have small children, and so they need to take care of those children at home. How in the world can you work outside of the home with small kids? Might be possible after the kids are up and grown. Different situation with older women. But younger women, I have two daughters who are stay-at-home moms, one of whom was an ex-lawyer, or is an ex-lawyer. I have a daughter-in-law who is staying at home, homeschooling her kids. My wife and I did the same thing with our children. It is possible despite all the economic pressures. All I can say is you better pray hard about finances and you better not conform to your culture, because if you do either one of those things or fail in either one of those aspects, you will not be able to raise your kids with a stay-at-home mom. The subject of stay-at-home moms is one that has caused much controversy. This is in another place at the gotquestions.org website. The subject of stay-at-home moms is one that has caused much controversy, especially in Western nations where many women work outside the home. There really are only two direct verses or passages that talk about a mother staying at home with her children. Titus 2, verses 3 through 5 says, likewise, teach the older women to be reverent in the way they live, not to be slanderers or addicted to much wine, but to teach what is good. Then they can train the younger women to love their husbands and children, to be self-controlled and pure, to be busy at home, to be busy at home, at home, at home. I emphasize that. To be kind and to be subject to their husbands so that no one will malign the word of God. The other direct verse is 1 Timothy 5:14, which says, so I counsel younger widows to marry, to have children, to manage their homes, and to give the enemy no opportunity for slander. To manage their home, 1 Timothy 5:14. I counsel younger widows to marry, have children, and to manage their homes. I also consider some indirect verses. Proverbs 14:1 states that it is wise for a woman to invest in her home. Let me stop and read that. Every wise woman builds her house, says Proverbs 14:1, but a foolish one tears it down with her own hands. So a wise woman builds her house. While it is not necessary, continuing with gotquestions.org, while it is not necessary to be a stay-at-home mom in order to invest in your home, we see the priority that God places on the home and the woman's involvement. Clearly, the home is not to be neglected for the sake of outside employment. Deuteronomy 6:4-9 teaches the importance of constantly teaching our children. Of course, this is addressed to fathers as well as mothers. Staying at home with children would only give more opportunities to teach children God's ways. A lot more opportunity than the daycare teacher. So it is a positive investment to be made in children's lives by applying this passage of Scripture literally. Finally, Proverbs 31 is the well-known passage about the wife and mother of excellence. From the description of her, we learn that this mother did work outside of the home. However, her family never lacked anything. She maintained a proper balance, so her family never suffered. Her family was always her priority. While the Bible leaves women the choice whether to stay at home with the children or go to work outside the home, it certainly is a commendable thing for a mother to be at home with the children and devote herself to training them full time. Women are definitely encouraged in Titus 2 and 1 Timothy 5 to stay at home with their young children. Whatever a woman chooses, she must maintain her home as a priority and her primary sphere of influence. Well, in my humble opinion, that's fudging it just a little bit too much, mainly because it's almost impossible to work outside the home, come back, and have any energy left for your kids. Jobs are draining. Now, if you want to do something to work inside the home while the kids are asleep, I have a Chinese convert, young woman, got two little kids, three-year-olds. She's an accountant. She's working from her house. She turned down a job that would require her to leave her home so she could stay home and work around her kids in the house. And this is what the Proverbs 31 woman did. She was working in her home, whether she's working in the vineyard or selling goods and other things we're going to see that she's doing in just a minute. She was not climbing the corporate jungle. And I think we need to emphasize that if you want to raise kids, you better make provision for the mother to stay at home to look after those kids and to Gehenna with what our culture says about that. We go down to Proverbs 31:18-19. Lemuel's mother continues talking about the excellent wife. She sees that her profits are good and her lamp never goes out at night. She extends her hands to the spinning staff and her hands hold the spindle. She sees that her profits are good. The NIV says her trading is profitable. The KJV says her merchandise is good. Well, what she's doing, she's buying and selling. Maybe cloth that she's making, maybe food that she's growing. Her lamp never goes out at night. Here's three reasons, optional reasons, why her lamp never goes out at night. Option number one, to be ready in case a bandit attacks. I don't believe that. That's what King Lemuel's mother meant. Adam Clark suggests that. Adam Clark suggests option number two, because some workers were working at night. She needed to stay up and work at night with them, maybe working in the vineyard so her lamp doesn't go out. Or, I think the easiest option is option three. The reason her lamp never goes out at night is because she herself worked late at night. How does she work late at night? Verse 19, she extends her hands to the spinning staff and her hands hold the spindle. Now, this is referring to the ancient way of making thread from wool before the spinning wheel was invented. It was invented in 1375 A.D., somewhere between 1375 and 1425, which was a long time after these psalms were written. We don't know exactly when this psalm was written, say 1,000 or so B.C., 2,000 years later. So thread was made with a distaff and spindle. Spinning staff is the way the Holman Christian Study Bible has it. The NASB has distaff. Now, I've got a picture here in front of me of a woman with a distaff and spindle. A distaff is the stick about which the sheep's wool is wrapped around, and then she pulls threads out of that wool as the distaff is held in one hand, and she pulls that thread down to the spindle in the other hand, and the spindle is the stick around which the thread is wrapped. Now, I don't know any further than that exactly how this process worked, but that's how it worked, and that's hard work. No wonder she has to keep her arm strong. We go now to Proverbs 31, verses 20 through 24. Lemuel's mother continues talking about the excellent wife. The excellent wife extends her hand to the poor, and she stretches out her hands to the needy. She is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. She makes coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them and supplies belts to the tradesmen. Now, the excellent wife is not afraid of the snow. She's not afraid of anybody freezing to death because everybody in her household got clothes on. Now, it says clothed with scarlet in the NASB. Some translate scarlet as double, so all her household are clothed doubly. For example, the Holman Christian Study Bible, she is not afraid for her household when it snows, for all in her household are doubly clothed. In other words, they have lots of warm clothes on. She makes coverings for herself in verse 22. That could be bed coverings, wall hangings, furniture coverings, or all three. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Now, this is interesting. Fine linen and purple, that's what a queen wears. So she dresses up very nicely. Notice in verse 20, she extends her hand to the poor. So it's all right for her to be rich while she helps the poor. There's so many people that want to help the poor, and they act like it's a sin. If you got something nice, that is not so. And this verse proves it. In verse 23, her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. Now, the gates of a city, of course, is where the business and legal transactions of the day are carried out. The husband went there to do politics, law, and business. The reason he could do that is because his wife had taken care of his home, giving him time to do that kind of thing when he sits among the elders of the land. Verse 24, she makes linen garments and sells them. So not only is she working in a vineyard, making wine, gathering grapes, she's actually making clothes and sells them and supplies belts to the tradesmen. Garments and belts. So she's making some money on the side. Not necessarily, in fact, not outside of the home, but in the home. She's making them. The tradesmen, where are they located? Well, you could argue that they were outside of the home. So there, see there, she's outside the home, went into town to sell her stuff. Well, maybe, but most probably I think that the tradesmen came to her house and bought the linen garments from her at home. That's speculation, I don't know, but it's perfectly reasonable, I think. Now, belts were often highly valued. For example, in 2 Samuel 18:11, Joab, that's David's general during Absalom's rebellion, Joab said to the man who had told him that Absalom was hanging in a tree by his hair. Then Joab said to the man who had told him, "Now behold, you saw him, Absalom. Why then did you not strike him there to the ground? And I would have given you 10 pieces of silver and a belt." So belts were valuable, and the woman is making valuable belts. This excellent wife is doing that. We go now to Proverbs 31, verses 25 through 31. Lemuel's mother continues. Strength and honor are her clothing, the excellent wife's clothing, and she can laugh at the time to come. That's Holman Christian Study Bible. NASB has the future. She can laugh at the future. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and loving instruction is on her tongue. She watches over the activities of her household and is never idle. Her sons rise up and call her blessed. Her husband also praises her. Many women are capable, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord will be praised. Give her the reward of her labor, and let her works praise her at the city gates. And verse 25, the excellent wife is able to laugh at her future. She doesn't worry about what is going to happen in general. So future could just refer to everything in the future, or it could be the far future, her old age. She's not worried about her old age. Or it could mean, even further in the future, she's not worried about the afterlife. What's going to happen to her? Because she knows God is going to be with her forever. She can laugh at the future. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and loving instruction is on her tongue. Other translations for loving instruction, the NASB has the teaching of kindness. Loving instruction is the Holman Christian Study Bible. Gill says the law of love is on her tongue. Here's another quote. I think it's by Gill. There are very few of those who are called managing women who are not lords over their husbands, tyrants over their servants, and insolent among their neighbors. But this woman, with all her eminence and excellence, was of a meek and quiet spirit. Blessed woman. Now, I have seen a lot of polls when I used to teach management. I always ask my class the same thing. How many of you would rather have a woman manager or a male manager? And almost universally, women prefer male managers. I have a theory about that. It's because that women, because they're not naturally leaders, because of their nature, they have to compensate for their weak voices and the fact that men look at them as weaker, and so they start acting a little strong, and they start acting the tyrant. I have worked for such a woman one time. I wouldn't rather be in hell. I was already in hell working for her. It was horrible. There's a lot of women working for these type of women who know exactly what I'm talking about. I remember one time I was taking a business class at the University of South Carolina, and a former CEO of Fiji Film Company, which is now bankrupt, but back then it was a well-known film company. I say Fiji, it might have been Fuji. I can't remember the name of the film company. It was second to Kodak. But he said he had a woman boss that was very successful in a corporation because she acted like a woman. She didn't try to act like a man. She dressed like a woman. She was very kind to everybody. She was very nurturing. She was very helpful to all the workers, and everybody loved her. So it's possible for women to be in charge of her kids, charge of her family, charge of a household, charge of her servants, even though she is not a man. But when she opens her mouth to manage, she needs to do it with wisdom and loving instruction. That's what an excellent wife does. Loving instruction. This is how you do it, son. This is how you do it, servant. She watches over the activities of her household and is never idle. She manages the household. The husband's out there making bread, working for the man. She's managing the household. I've already quoted these verses twice. I'm going to quote them again. 1 Timothy 5:14, Paul says, "Therefore I want younger widows to get married, bear children, keep house." Titus 2:5, "Be sensible, pure, workers at home, being subject to their own husband." Workers at home, keeping children, bearing children, keeping house. Now in verse 30, Lemuel's mother says, "Charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting." She's talking about women's charm and women's beauty. "It's deceptive and fleeting. It's deceitful and fleeing." This is what John Gill says about such a woman: a well-favored look, a graceful countenance, symmetry and proportion of parts. Natural or artificial beauty are vain and deceitful. Oftentimes under them lies an ill-natured, deformed, and depraved mind. I remember so well, business professor, very nice guy, successful in his career. He had money, he was fine, but he ended up in court all the time because of his son, because he was constantly in legal arguments with his ex-wife over how to educate the son. And he told me some legal shenanigans the ex-wife had done and how it cost him a lot of money. And he goes on and on about what a horrible woman this was. And finally, I looked at this guy and I said, "Why in the world did you marry such a woman?" Because the guy was intelligent. He was young when he married her. He was in his 50s or 60s when I was talking to him. So I said, "Why did you marry her?" And he said, "Because she was beautiful." Oh, under that beauty lay an ill-natured, deformed, and depraved mind. Proverbs 11:22 says, "As a ring of gold in a swine's snout, so is a beautiful woman who lacks discretion, who lacks wisdom." The ring of gold is pretty, but the swine's ugly. The woman's outward appearance is beautiful, but the woman's heart is ugly. That's kind of the way that parallel goes there. Often beautiful women are praised only for their beauty, and so they don't see the need to spend time on building their character. I could tell you all the pretty girls in my high school class, and I see them at high school reunions, and they've had divorces, and they've just lived horrible lives, and they're not pretty anymore. But then the old quiet girls, the ones that nobody paid any attention, I'm thinking of two right now, they ended up being quite pretty at the high school reunions. They weren't when we were growing up. They weren't popular, but they were pretty, and they were successful. Why? Because they relied on something more than their outward charm and beauty. Consider Pierce Brosnan. He was a former James Bond. He's a very handsome guy. And he married this woman who is now extraordinarily overweight. And he's happily married to her. And he stayed married to her for years. I mean, she's way overweight. I think she would take up three airplane seats. And this is a Hollywood marriage. And he's perfectly happy with her. And everybody's so shocked when they see it. I'm sure, I don't know her, but I'm sure she has lots of character, and that's why Pierce Brosnan stays with her, not because of how she looks, but because of how her heart is. Beauty is fleeting. Those who marry a woman because of her beauty are very short-sighted. What happens when she gets to be 85 years old? You ever thought about that? It is a weakness of the male gender to not be able to look past the beauty of a woman. It's a very pronounced weakness. In verse 31, Lemuel's mother says, "Give her, the excellent wife, the reward of her labor." And, of course, all of her labor, planting vineyards, making clothes, selling, buying, managing the household, dealing with the servants. The reward of her labor, what is that? The happy household, the happy husband, the happy children, the happy family. How many people would give their right arm for such? How many people don't have that? "Let her works praise her at the city gates. In other words, let everybody at the city gates, those people carrying out business and law and politics, let them know that her husband is married to a beautiful woman, and they'll say to that husband, "Oh, you've got a great wife." Ladies and gentlemen, we have now finished chapter 31 of the book of Proverbs, and we have finished the book of Proverbs. We are now ready in our next audio to tackle Solomon's other work of wisdom, the book of Ecclesiastes. And so I hope you stay tuned for chapter 1 of Ecclesiastes, which I will entitle All is Vanity. Ecclesiastes is one of my favorite books. We'll see you next time. Hope you enjoyed this audio.